The Celtics have won 10 in a row. They now have the best record in the NBA. But are they real title contenders? The TV voice of the Celtics, Mike Gorman, joins us with some great insight on the green. Then, Boston College basketball hopes to match the Celtics' winning ways. We talk with Eagles coach Jim Christian about how he plans to turn the team around. It's Thursday, November 9th. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Well, how about the Celtics? After what seemed like a disastrous start to the season, the Celtics lost forward Gordon Hayward in the opener and their first two games of the season. The Green have now reeled off 10 straight wins. Wednesday night, the Celtics took on their old rivals, the Los Angeles Lakers, at TD Garden. They had to play without center Al Horford. He was out with a concussion. And then rookie forward Jason Tatum got hurt as well. He had to leave the game with an ankle injury. The shorthanded Celtics almost blew a 21-point lead, but they managed to hold on to win 107-96. Joining me now is Mike Gorman, the iconic TV voice of the Celtics on NBC Sports Boston. Mike, welcome to Season Ticket.
My pleasure, Chris. Thanks.
So this has been a fun team to watch, and I'm not sure we thought this was the way it was going to go, Mike, after those first two games, particularly the opener in Cleveland with Gordon Hayward going down. But the Celtics have now won 10 in a row. They're 10-2. Have the best record in the NBA. This winning streak is their longest since 2011. Are you surprised at all by how this season has gone based on the way it started?
Yeah, without question. Their hearts and spirit potentially had been broken with the injury to Gordon, and you wondered how they would respond. They came back and lost that first night in Boston to Milwaukee, and, you know, always looked at the schedule and thought, gee, this doesn't look good for the coming weeks. Then they turn around and they win 10 in a row. They're a very entertaining bunch to watch. They're an interesting group to be around. They all seem to like each other. It's very different from the 2007-2008 team.
Yeah, obviously that team, that was great. I mean, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, that team bonded sort of immediately and won 66 games. Do you see that same sort of chemistry with this team or that same sort of capability with this team? Obviously, that team had bigger names. We all know how it ended with an NBA championship. That's a lofty standard to meet. But I'm surprised at how quickly things have meshed, particularly without Hayward, who I thought was going to be the conduit between Brad Stevens and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, I did too. The chemistry is remarkable. They're a very different bunch. The bunch in 2007-2008 were very strong in terms of personality, especially Kevin. Kevin kind of ruled the roost and told everybody what to do and where to go, and everybody was comfortable with that. This is a much quieter bunch. I get to travel with them, so I get to see how they react after games, and they're very level. This is a group that guys sit and watch a lot of movies on flights, watch a lot of tape on other games. Again, they're not a raucous bunch by any stretch. They kind of, you know, teams in the NBA always seem to mirror the personality of their best player. And Kyrie and Al are the two best players on this team. And Al, maybe more so than Kyrie, I think, is the leader of this team. And he's a very quiet, unassuming guy, leads by example, gets fired up during games, but off the court is, again, very soft-spoken, thoughtful guy. And this seems to be more of a soft-spoken, thoughtful team. And a team that people seem to really like, Chris. You know, the television ratings are as high as we've had in years.
Really? See, I wasn't aware of that, Mike. That's interesting because people really liked the prior iteration of this team with Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder. There was a real emotional connection there between the fan base and that team that was sort of a scrappy team, a team of guys that had been discarded and doubted in the NBA. And I think one of the things people had questions about was, would this team be embraced as quickly or in the same way as that team? But you're saying basically they have, at least based on the ratings.
The ratings would tell you that they have. And, you know, the thing with that team last year, Isaiah was wonderful to watch. I mean, that was a once-in-a-lifetime season for a player. The things he did in the fourth quarter probably will go unmatched for years. But I think everybody knew in their heart that team, as it was constituted, was not a team that was going to win a championship. They were going to be fun to watch, but they were going to be a team that would stop in the Eastern Conference Finals, would not get to the finals. And one of the things that's great about this Celtic organization, and especially this ownership and Danny, is that they want to win a championship. Anything short of winning a championship or putting themselves in the position to win a championship is not good enough. So I think by dismantling that team last year, as sorry as I was to see Avery Bradley go, who was my favorite player on the Celtic team, I think they did what they had to do to make themselves a contender. And I think now, given some of the discord that's going on in Cleveland, I think the Celtics have very much made themselves a contender. And Kyrie is a joy to watch. Al, if you're a basketball purist, is a joy to watch. And people are very excited about Tatum and Brown. Everywhere I go, people want to talk about the kids. And I think that's probably the biggest difference to me between last year's team and this year's team, is last year's team was made up mostly of, as you say, of veterans who are getting a chance to show themselves. Now it's Tatum and Brown that people want to talk about all the time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. People definitely excited about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, those two young guys. You mentioned the discord in Cleveland. I think that's been surprising to a lot of people. So right now, do you feel like the Celtics can be the best team in the East at the end of the year, even without Hayward? Can they be not only the number one seed, but can they go to the NBA Finals and represent the East in the Finals, knowing you're not going to have Gordon Hayward here and that whatever's going on in Cleveland, they still have LeBron James?
Yes, and as long as they have the best player in the world, they're a threat. I got in some trouble about a week ago, not trouble, but caused some controversy by saying that I don't think Cleveland will make the Eastern Conference Finals, and I don't think they will. There are some issues with that team right now. They don't defend. They did beat Washington in Washington, and people say, well, see, they're better than Washington. Well, it took 57 from LeBron to get a five-point win. So I think if Cleveland puts themselves in the position where they have to go through both Washington and Boston to get to the finals, I don't think they're going to be up to the task. And I think, again, if this discord which mirrors itself with them not winning games and having teams score 115-plus points every night out. If this is still going on in February, I think all the talk is going to come up about LeBron going to L.A. next year and leaving Cleveland, and I think it's just a potential madhouse there, whereas Boston, again, the chemistry is very good. Brad is an outstanding coach, and I think they're just sitting in the weeds there with letting Cleveland self-destruct, and they'll move into the spot. Washington is the biggest threat, and surprisingly, I think Detroit may be a real factor before the year is done.
Yeah, that's a great point on Detroit, Mike. You mentioned earlier Jason Tatum, people really excited about him, the number three pick in the draft, the rookie. Now, he had to leave last night's game with an injury, and this is one thing I think if you're a Celtics fan you have to be concerned about right now, the mounting injuries. We all know the Gordon Hayward situation, that gruesome injury to his left ankle in the opener against Cleveland. But Al Horford had to sit out last night after having concussion symptoms due to getting hit by Kent Bazemore on Monday in Atlanta. And then Jason Tatum leaves the game with an ankle injury, and people see him after the game in a walking boot. How Yep. concerned are you about these injuries right now? And I know Brad, you know, sort of said, well, we'll keep playing until we only have four guys. But at a certain point, you know, there's a breaking point of how many really good players you can lose.
If Jason were to go down for an extended period of time, that would not only hurt the team, but it would hurt his development, because he's a joy to watch play for a 19-year-old. You know, it's interesting, Chris, off the court, he very much acts and appears to be a 19-year-old. And on the court, though, you can tell by his body language, he's very comfortable. As each game goes on, you can tell that he feels he belongs and he feels he can be one of the better players on the court. So hopefully this is just a minor little thing with him and he'll be back in a game or so. The Al Horford situation, I'm always worried about concussions, because I think you have to give up your hopes of a team winning or losing, and you have to be concerned about the individual involved, because, as you know, the concussion syndrome in sports right now is a big deal. So I'm concerned about Alan's his health, and I'm concerned about Jason. And every time I see Gordon sitting in a chair instead of playing basketball, I tend to wonder what could have been.
Yeah, that's one of the things about sports, right? It's so unpredictable. You can't account for the injuries. We can debate whatever we want to debate, and you're sort of assuming health there, but you take one guy out or two guys out, and it completely changes the complexion of a team. And Jason Tatum, as you mentioned, would be a huge loss. And you know, he's a guy that's come in and already scored sort of at an NBA level. I mean, he came in with an NBA-ready game, and that's something yep. that I think has helped them be able to compensate for the loss of Gordon Hayward. I think another thing that's helped them compensate for Hayward's loss, Marcus Morris. I think he's one of these guys, when he's on the other team, you don't like him. You hate him. You say, I hate that guy. But when he's on your team, you're like, I like this guy.
That's exactly right. That's exactly how I feel about him. I was not a fan of his when he was on the Pistons, but now he's with us, and I see what he can do. And, you know, the thing is, I don't know if you had a chance yet to be around Marcus. I really enjoyed it, the little time I've been around him. And, again, whereas some guys, again, you know, Chris, they don't meet your eye in conversation. They kind of act as if they're half listening to questions and give you cliches for answers. He's not that way at all. He looks you right in the eye, he listens to what you say, and usually has a pretty intelligent response.
I want to get your thoughts on Lonzo Ball here, because I think for a lot of people, that was their first opportunity to really see him in depth. I mean, unless you got NBA League Pass, and I know he played in the
unless
summer.
Unless you're a junkie, right?
Yeah, exactly. Unless you're like a complete basketball junkie. And you know, you've been around, you know, for more than three decades. Summer League's different when the kids are playing against the kids. This is Lonzo Ball in the real NBA. What did you think of him, Mike?
I'm very impressed with his passing ability. I think the biggest problem going forward for him is, like, he came into last night's game shooting 29% from the floor. People are just going to play him for the pass. And we saw it last night. Marcus Smart had a couple of steals off where, when you looked at the replay, he never even gave any thought to the fact that the kid was going to shoot the ball. He was just trying to figure out where he was going to pass it, and he was able to guess right on a couple of occasions. And I think you'll see a lot of that in terms of defending him. Now, if he gets his shot in order, it's a funny-looking shot, but guys like Kevin Martin have had good careers in the NBA with funny-looking shots. I think it'll be a different ball game, but until he starts shooting the ball, at least in the low 40s, he can't shoot 29% and be effective, because, again, nobody will play you for the shot. They'll play you for the pass. Even with guys last night, though, playing from the pass, he made a couple of passes that really turned your head. So he obviously has a very good feel for the game. I talked to the LA broadcasters before the game last night, and they like him, and they think he can be a very good player in time. But when you bring up the shooting, they just kind of shake their head. So that's the biggest thing that I think he has to change. It has to succeed at if he's going to be a big time player.
Yeah, and also, you know, just the situation there with LeVar Ball and his dad, and all the pressure and the hype that's been created by the Ball family. They sort of want to be the Kardashians of basketball. It's hard enough to come into the NBA without putting that target on your son's back immediately. I mean, we saw it right off the jump with Patrick Beverley of the Los Angeles Clippers went after him, like, right off the jump at the start of the season.
Yep. Yeah, that's kind of a crazy situation. Again, I was talking to the LA people last night, and I asked if the guy was how he was at games, and they said people are lined up trying to get his autograph, that he's actually, just being the father, is a pretty popular figure in the LA area. So maybe we're getting a different slant on it out here. But he certainly has his hands full with his son in China right now. That's a strange
situation. Yeah, you're
absolutely
right. That situation. Lonzo Ball's brother, LiAngelo, arrested in China potentially for shoplifting, and that's a serious situation.
Yeah, and I guess the team had to leave, and he's being held in a hotel, or being restricted from leaving the hotel that he's in, and the team has gone to another city to play a game. So there's no telling what the Ball family will do next, that's for sure.
Yeah, you don't know. You don't know. Switching it back to basketball, I'll say this quickly.
Yeah, that's
you know,
a good idea.
Yeah. Lonzo Ball, it's funny, when you just listen to you talk about people playing him for the pass and stuff, that reminds me a little bit of Rajon Rondo when he first came into the league, and Rajon had to prove he could knock down some shots. And sometimes what worked against Rajon was he wouldn't even take the shots, and teams knew that. Like, he was reluctant to even shoot.
Right. Exactly right. I always thought he was basically shy, and that shyness was interpreted as arrogance by a lot of people. But yeah, that's a good comparison between those two. And Rajon still hasn't hit the shot with any consistency and has had a pretty good career.
Yeah, he's had a great career. So speaking of great careers, obviously, Mike, you've had a great career, not just with the Celtics, but the voice of Big East basketball as well. But a major milestone happened this week on Monday. It was the 36th anniversary of you and Tommy Heinsohn calling your first game together. I don't even know what the name of NBC Sports Boston was back then. Was it Prism?
Prism, yes.
Okay.
That ugly green jacket, yeah.
What do you remember from that day, and has your preparation at all changed from that first time you worked with Tommy to now?
My preparation hasn't changed because Tommy is not big on preparation. So in order to go along with him, I've cut back on mine. That very first game, I had my charts up in the booth ready to go, multicolored names, heights, weights, scoring averages, free throw percentages, how many people in the family, what their dad and mom did. I just had so much information on every player. And Tommy comes up and he looks at it and he goes, "What's that blank?" You know? And I said, that's what we're going to use during the game. We're in that little overhang, and that used to have the technique sign in the old Boston Garden. And he reaches down, and he takes my copious notes, and he crumples them up in a little ball, and he throws it off the balcony. And he looks at me, and he says, "We're going to talk about what happens in front of us." And that's what we've been doing for 36 years, is talking about what happens in front of us. It's fun because, I see so many broadcasters who do their due diligence before the game, but then feel a need to get all that stuff back out that they did, all the information they got on every player. And, when you're doing games like I've been doing and Tommy have been doing for 36 years, people who are watching us, they don't need to know how many kids are in Paul Pierce's family. They're Celtic fans. They know all that stuff. They just want to hear what Tommy has to say about the game that is happening. So we've been able to have 36 years of relative success without doing any preparation. It's been kind of interesting. Very different when I was doing the Big East. The Big East, you treated games like you wanted both. You rooted for both teams. That's what the way I did the broadcast anyway in the Big East. But now everybody knows we want the Celtics to win. I take being called a homer as a compliment, not as any kind of knock.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, it's funny. I would say I don't even think of you. I think most people think of Tommy as the homer. We know you want the Celtics to win, but you don't come across as an extreme sort of homer. We know, Tommy's wearing his heart on his sleeve. He bleeds green, and that's obvious. And I think a lot of people like that because he watches it the same way a fan does. Do you have any great Tommy Heinsohn stories? I mean, we hear him get apoplectic on the air, but I have to imagine there's some, like in a commercial break or something, where he just goes after one of these officials or something.
Yeah, I've always been amazed. I mean, he still has time left, so he can still make this come true. I've always been amazed that he hasn't got tossed by an official because he reserves some of his loudest comments to when the official is within 8 or 10 feet of our broadcast location to make sure that they hear him.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Call for a personal foul.
That was absolutely ridiculous. Went and walked.
That was...
He walked! What is the matter with these guys?
There was one point, I forget the official's name, but Tommy had felt that he called a particularly bad game, and they started yelling at each other in the corridors there between the press room and the locker rooms, and actually had to have some security people come in between the two of them. Now, this was probably 8-10 years ago, so we're talking about like a 73-year-old guy going after like a 68-year-old guy. So it would have been an interesting fight if it ever actually happened. But that's as close as I've ever seen to Tommy exchanging blows with an official. Tommy's unique. I mean, people overuse that word and say things like somebody's very unique. You're either unique or you're not. But Tommy is unique in that he never... Kuz went away and coached in Cincinnati. Bill Russell went away and coached in Seattle. Tommy has only worked from the Boston Celtics from the day he got out of college. And he's had opportunities. He could have gone to Houston. He could have gone to L.A. He could have gone a couple of other places over the course of years and pretty much could have written his own ticket. But he chose to stay in Boston. And so he's in the Hall of Fame as a coach. He's in the Hall of Fame as a player, and he should go into the wing of the Hall of Fame as a broadcaster. I mean, this is a guy who literally has spent 50 plus years with the same franchise. That's remarkable.
Absolutely remarkable. And I think it's great to listen to you guys. We all certainly enjoy it around here. That is the great Mike Gorman, TV voice of the Celtics on NBC Sports Boston. You can find him on Twitter. Great Twitter handle, @CelticsVoice. Mike, thanks for joining us on Season Ticket.
My pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
Coming up, our own Joe Sullivan talks with the head coach of the BC Eagles men's basketball team as they get their season underway. Can the Eagles shoot their way to their first winning season since 2011? That's next. Welcome back. A quick note, if you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. The Boston College Eagles men's basketball team, they start their season on Friday. Now, they've registered 6 straight losing seasons. They haven't made the NCAA tournament this decade, but they're hoping that they can turn things around. The Globe sports editor Joe Sullivan talked with Eagles head coach Jim Christian about his plan to bring winning basketball back to the Heights.
Jim Christian is heading into his fourth year as Boston College basketball coach. It hasn't been easy, and that's putting it mildly. Wins have been hard to come by, but there's reason for optimism this season. So, Jim, thanks for joining us here on Season Ticket. Let me start by saying this. There are people who think the job you have might be one of the most difficult in all of college basketball because you're in the Atlantic Coast Conference with the likes of Duke and North Carolina. It makes it very difficult to compete at that level. And plus the academic demands that a student-athlete would have. How do you react to that when people say
well,
that?
Well, you know, I think a lot of these jobs come down to timing and when you're taking them over. So, you know, when I took over BC, it was really numbers. So, you know, if you had a great team back or some really proven players back and you're trying to add a piece here or a piece there that can maybe help you get over that hump a little bit, that's one situation. But after my first year, I had 9 scholarships, and you only get 13. So I think it was more of a situation where this I knew coming in, and I knew, especially after year one, that this was going to be a total rebuild from that point forward. So you really got to kind of stay positive with yourself and stay with the process, and I feel like we've done that. I think that now, you know, this is the first time I've ever returned a double-figure scorer in 3 years, mm-hmm. and I have 2 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we added a young man, Deontay Hawkins, who kind of makes us – different because at the 4 position has just been a really tough situation for us. We haven't had a scoring punch from there. He gives us that.
So your backcourt, Jerome Robinson and Kai Bowman. Jerome Robinson's a junior.
Robinson, one-handed rim rattler.
Kai Bowman is a sophomore this year.
Bowman to catch and shoot. Wow. 9 of Boston College's 11 belong to freshman Kai Bowman.
What is the ceiling for them? Because people are really optimistic about what they could do.
Well, it's interesting because I think, you know, all of these things come down to their drive, right? What do they want and what are they about? And I think both of those guys, they really want to leave their mark on a winning program. They want to have impact. They want to have impact that people will remember. And at the same time, they're chasing their NBA dream. They both, even though one was ranked 390th in the country, Kai, and one was 270th in the country, Jerome, they both believe in when they came and if given the opportunity to prove it, they're NBA players. And I want them to chase that dream. And I want them to also do some things. But I think, in my mind, I don't know if they're the best backcourt in the country, but I don't think there's anybody better. I think they're probably as good as anybody in the country.
That's quite a statement. So yeah. Anybody listening out there should go check this out at Conte Forum and see this backcourt. They are terrific. They really are. And so are those the types of players you have to find, the ones that aren't rated that highly but have that mm-hmm. great potential? Is that your goal when you're looking for players?
Well, I think if you look historically at Boston College, that's kind of what's happened. They've been able to, historically, find some of these hidden guys that have great talent and great upside and then let them get older. Let them play as young players. Let them learn. Let them develop. Let them, you know, kind of go through the ups and downs of what is a great league. And when they get older, the team gets to be pretty good. I think if you look at the great teams that Al Skinner had, that's kind of what happened. And I think that's kind of what we've done. I think that if you look at our basketball team, we have a great foundation with guys who've played a lot of minutes. And, well, those guys, in particular Kai, is just very easy to find. He is always in the gym. He's always in there working on his game. We went to the Bahamas this summer, and we played 2 games, one on a Saturday, one on a Monday. On Saturday, I think he went 2-for-7 from 3, and at 10 o'clock at night, and I get back from dinner with my wife, I look at the outside court, he's shooting, and he's out there till 1 o'clock in the morning. That's a different type of drive with him to get to what he wants, and why wouldn't we want to support that in every way we can?
So, and one of the reasons you have him, I believe, is that he was really recruited as a football player, right? I mean, he was someone who could have gone to Alabama and played for one of the best football teams in the country. But he preferred basketball, which
just
is
loved basketball. He just loved it, and you know, I think the main reason I think both of them came is they knew from day one they would have an opportunity to showcase what they can do. And if you look at, you know, the amount of time they're on the floor, the way they play, the way we play, they fit perfectly for what I'm trying to do and what our program's trying to do. They're perfect for that, and I think in that regard, they've been able to showcase their talents, play through mistakes, and that's really what this is about.
And I would say, I put it at the last 5 years, graduate transfers have become really a trend in college basketball. The NCAA allows a player who has graduated but only played 3 seasons to transfer anywhere and be eligible immediately. And this is another thing I'm hearing. I'm hearing you have a good one this year, a graduate transfer who can really help you.
I'm so excited. Deontay Hawkins is his name. He's a transfer from Illinois State, and he's a guy. They won 27 games last year.
Boom, dump off, and a jam. And it's Deontay Hawkins off the nice pass from Clayton.
Pretty basketball.
And this guy has just been unbelievable to coach. He's probably the most coachable guy on my team. He really understands and is here to win games. And that's the whole thing with the fifth-year player. You have to try to kind of get through. Is he just trying to help his own situation, or is he trying to help you win because he feels that's the way to help his situation? I really think Deontay has been like that. He's been a great teammate. He's been a leader on our team. He's without question the most vocal player we have on the court. He's been a blessing for us right now, and he just gives us a different option. I mean, a guy that can score inside and outside, and just another weapon, that we didn't have. And you're going to need him because you're going to need, two guys in this particular league is not going to be enough.
So every year when college basketball starts, suddenly you discover a player who you never heard of, who becomes tremendous. Is there a breakout player in your gym fall that we should know about?
I think there's a guy that anybody who comes to our games, you're going to notice him right away. His name is Stephon Mitchell. And Stephon is a guy from Minneapolis, very under-recruited, very much like Kai and Jerome. He probably won't impact the game with the scoring punch that they did, but he's just one of those guys that he takes so much pride in doing all the things it takes to win. He's become invaluable to our team. I think if you asked our team who's the hardest playing guy, who's the toughest guy on our team, they would without question tell you Stephon Mitchell. He just impacts the game in so many ways that show up on the stat sheet because he's a tremendous rebounder, but also ways that don't, in the way he hustles, takes charges, understands the game. He's very versatile. He'll play both three and four for us at 6'8", 230 pounds. So he's a really pleasant surprise for our team.
Have you ever heard the reference to the napkin game? So this is what fans...
I have not.
All right, so fans of college basketball do this. It's like you're at a bar and you got the bar napkin, and you go through the schedule and you say, all right, this is a W, this is an L, and then you go through the whole season and you count it up. So obviously you don't use a napkin because you're surprised.
No.
But do you do that yourself in your head or on a piece of paper?
I try not to because there's been so many times throughout my years doing this that I'm like, man, our team, we're in a great rhythm. We're going to play great. And then we play awful. Mm-hmm. And there's so many times where last year we played Hartford, which is probably the worst game I've ever been part of. And then 2 days later we're playing Auburn at Madison Square Garden and we play the best game of the year.
Here's Bowman. Crosses half court with five. Gets to the rim. Puts it up.
You just don't know because you're dealing with young kids and their ability to respond, just to find those levels of consistency. So I try to stay away from the napkin game because I would only confuse myself.
Well, I did the napkin game with you. You're not surprised that I went down and very in an optimistic way,
right?
Because I'm rooting for success here. And I came up with 16 wins.
Okay, good. And I hope you're wrong.
You want more than that?
I want more than that.
All right, Jim Christian, thanks for joining us. You're on Twitter, right? At BC Jim Christian, is that right?
I'm on Twitter, but I don't really tweet.
All right, well, we appreciate you joining Season Ticket. His team opens Friday night against Maine at Conte Forum. Let's get a win. What do you say, 1-0?
1-0 is all you can ask for after the first game. It's all you can ask for.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay, thank you.
All right, that was Globe Sports Editor Joe Sullivan talking with BC Men's Basketball Coach Jim Christian. And that's it for this edition of Season Ticket. Be sure to tell a friend about us and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like us, please leave us a review. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.